do you like? Movie podcast hosted by inebriated people. That's Kai with the cracking voice and Heather's touched by evil. One thinks he's Spider-Man, the other is a ninja. It's the Man I Love Film Podcast, it's the MILFcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to MILFcast. This is the Man I Love Films podcast where we don't do movie reviews. Nope, it's a place where people like films get together and deal with that shit. I am your host, Kai. Joining me, as always, the one and only, and I don't mean that in a good way, Heather Baxendale. Say hello, Heather.
Hi, Kai. I'm so excited we're back for a regular episode.
I know, it's been a long time. Let's spend a moment with you.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Heather.
All right, Heather, so I was going to bring something else up, but then something happened yesterday. I want to talk about it.
Did I do something?
Well, kind of. Like, I made a very simple post. I've been doing a lot of artwork lately. I've gotten back into doing drawing, which is something I've done my whole life, but I kind of took, like, a hiatus from it, and lately I've kind of had a resurgence of creativity, I guess. I got tasked with creating a comic strip for a entity that I won't get into because it's another part of my life I don't want to bring into this. But so it got me drawing again. I've been doing a lot of drawing, and I made a post yesterday that I kind of discovered digital art, which is something I wish I'd done a long time ago. And you were confused by my post, and I don't understand why.
I wasn't really confused. I was just messing with you.
No, you were confused. Don't try to play it off.
No, your wording of it was kind of funny because you were saying I've never would finish something without using ink, and then you proceeded to say that that's exactly what you were doing. But I really don't exactly understand how the digital side of things work and how it, you know, for someone like you who uses your hands and drawing and blah, 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 how that applies to the digital verse. For someone like me who can barely put stick figures together because it's pretty amazing to me. Which, by the way, you are insanely talented, and I don't like to give you compliments because they go straight to your fucking head.
Yeah.
But wow. Serial.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. I used to do art. I had my own art exhibits when I was like 19. I've done comic strips in the past. I just kind of took a break from it to do writing and do other stuff, do this kind of stuff too. This was another thing, and have a family at the same time. So I haven't done it in a long time, and it's nice going back to it. I'm kind of re-educating myself on the basics, and the stuff I've been putting out so far has been really cool. But it's going to be a lot of movie theme stuff because that's what I tend to like. So I'm hoping at some point to get an Instagram going, and hopefully now that I'm getting in the digital side, start creating my own prints and putting them for sale online. So pay attention to the show, and in the future, when that comes up, when that becomes available, I'll let everybody know, and hopefully there's some cool stuff that people will want. And we don't need to dive into that right now, so I'll leave it alone. I was just curious about your statement, but I will say this before we move on. I never thought I would say this, but based on our conversation, which I'm not going to get into because it was private, you need to poop more, okay? You don't have a healthy, regular bowel movements. And you should consult a physician.
I probably should for more reasons than that.
I agree. Let's move on.
This has been A Moment with Heather.
All right. So our guest today is a former writer at the now defunct ManILoveFilms.com. Her personal blog is Suddenly A Shot Rang Out, which can be found at suddenlyashotrangout.com. In addition to that, Lauren writes for WeVeGotThisCovered.com and Movies Film Cinema, which can be found at MoviesFilmCinema.com. That makes it easy, guys. Her Twitter is at LHBusiness, B-I-Z-N-E-S-S-S. Nope, too many S's. Take one away. Give it up for our good friend Lauren Humphrey's book. Say hello, Lauren.
Yes, hello. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you back. It's been so long. We took a long hiatus, and I guess we're just kind of going back and retraining through our old guests because we like talking to them so much, and I'm glad you took the time to join us. I have to ask you, you're a big Ghostbusters fan. Real quick, out of the gate, this year gave us the remake. What did you think?
I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I swear, I saw it 3 times in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it now, I think, a total of 6 times. So I bought the Blu-ray and everything. All of my friends loved it. So, yeah, it was great. I've never been happier about having the tattoo that I have.
Is it live up to the original?
I think it's different enough from the original that it doesn't, you know, you don't have to say, oh, this, it's better or it lives up to it. I think that it does its own thing while also paying great homage to the original film. So I can happily enjoy both of them.
Okay, great answer. Well, you've been here before, but for anyone listening that doesn't know what we do, we're going to have a general discussion topic. We're going to do the Series 7. We're going to play the game. But before we do all that, we'd like to talk about what we've been watching.
What have you seen lately?
All right, so we always start with our guest. Lauren, is there a film you've seen recently that you feel compelled to speak of?
Yeah, I just recently saw Hidden Figures in the movie theater last weekend. And it's nominated for an Oscar this year. It's got some amazing central performances. I'm actually surprised that more of those women did not get nominated. And it was just, it was a very uplifting film, particularly in, you know, this period where there's so much conflict going on, and particularly around racism and racial issues and issues of women in the workforce, in public. And it was just wonderful to see a film that really celebrated the contributions of people that have not been celebrated before.
Well, and it's nice to see the women overshine people, like, they're not pushing Kevin Costner's appearance in it or any of that. I love all the actresses in the film. I'm surprised the staying power this film has had. Like, if you track its box office run over the last several weeks, it has done phenomenal. And I have to be honest, I wasn't sure that it would appeal, not because of the women or any of that, just because, you know, it's about the behind the scenes of NASA, not necessarily the spaceship. From what I know, I still haven't seen it yet, so I look forward to seeing it. But the overall, the way it's been embraced makes me want to see it even more. Like, there's some really good content there, and I'm really happy about that. But I'm surprised the movie's done as well as it has.
Yeah, it's a very, I guess it's a unique film, but I think that it's probably come at the right time also, when there are a lot of people that are feeling despairing, but also that you need that kind of reinforcement that, you know, great women and brilliant African-American women have been around for so long. It was one of those films that watching, and I was like, it's like, you know, man, if only white dudes had not been running the show the entire time, we could be on Mars by now, you know?
Totally. I totally agree that white dudes should not be in charge, now more than ever. This film did get a little lucky with when it got released, though, because it really did kind of tap into, like, what's going on with the culture right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a question of whether or not it would have been a successful, maybe even if it had been released last year. But I think that it kind of came at the right time, like you say, and it's a very positive film also. It's not like, it doesn't go into a great deal of issues of racial violence or, anger or anything. It represents things very realistically, but also very hopefully. These women are being recognized for their contributions, and they were, you know, integral to launching the United States into space, to putting John Glenn on the moon eventually.
Okay, so you would highly recommend it. Does it deserve more Oscar praise, in your opinion?
I think so. I'm honestly surprised that I know that Octavia Spencer got nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but the other two didn't for anything, and I'm very surprised by that.
Well, we can get into more of that later. But you would recommend the film?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. I look forward to seeing it. The word of mouth around it's been amazing. I saw a little film the other day called The Accountant. And I was very surprised at how much I like this movie. For those of you that don't know, this is
the Affleck movie?
This is the Affleck movie, where he's not a hitman. He's basically an accountant.
Hence the name. Oh, wow.
He's an accountant for people that have shady dealings. And I think what does he have in the film? They say he's a high-functioning autism is what he has. So there's some tics that he has. He has problems having relationships with normal people. He has kind of developed a way through a very strange relationship with his father to function in society, and used his mental abilities to accrue a lot of money from bad people. And things kind of go awry in the story, as you would expect. And there's a twist at the end, so I don't want to get too much into it, that I thought was a little kind of out of left field. But for whatever reason, as just a straight-up action film, I thought it worked out really well. In fact, the whole time I was watching it, I was telling my wife, it looks like he's trying to do his version of Bourne, and the whole time he looks kind of just as badass as Jason Bourne did in the original Jason Bourne. So I thought it was really good, and I would recommend it. Have you guys seen it?
No, I was thinking about it, but it's not on the top of my list.
What's on the top of your list?
Right now, Arrival and Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, Arrival's very good. Mm. What about you, Lauren?
Yeah. On the top of my list, or what I think of The Accountant?
What you think of The Accountant.
I mean, I remember when it initially came out, I think, and or at least when it was playing at film festivals or something like that, and it got very bad reviews. And so I kind of bumped it down a little bit in my interest. So I haven't seen it yet. Poor Ben Affleck has not been doing so well.
He's had a rough year. Like, the last one he just directed himself, which typically when he directs a movie, I'm very excited to see. This last one was a huge bomb for him. Was it Cold Light of Day? What is that one called?
It was Live by Night.
Live by Night. Yeah, same type of title. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not been a good year for him. And he backed out of Batman, so I don't know. But I actually thought he was pretty good in this. And sometimes it's nice to see him go do a movie that he's not, you know, helming and writing and do everything and give a solid performance. I thought he was good in the film. And I always like Anna Kendrick, so I would recommend it based on that. What about you, Heather? What have you seen recently?
I was saving Arrival and Hacksaw Ridge for this weekend because I wanted to watch them with Mike. But so I rewatched something that I loved when I was younger and hadn't seen in probably a good decade. I rewatched Untamed Heart with Christian Slater and Marissa Tomei, which I was obsessed with this movie when I was a teenager, and now I'm not exactly sure why.
Yeah, I
really hate that this is one of those things that I think is probably a good general discussion topic for the future too. It's those movies that maybe when you were younger that you really loved, and then as an adult you no longer connect to,
that don't hold up well.
Yeah, they sometimes don't hold up well, and sometimes just don't have the exact same, you know, like this one, for instance. It's, especially for me, I find it very strange because I really like strong women characters that are self-empowered, or they've had to overcome something to become that way. But I like very self-motivated female characters. And this was very, while the story is kind of almost princess getting saved by the prince thing, and it's really strange to me. The whole entire story is basically Marissa Tomei wants a guy to love her, and I feel instead of this like great connection between the two, because they do have good chemistry, instead I feel like it's a situation where she just wanted to be in love and wanted to have someone be with her, so she picked him because he's finally the guy that said yes and was there. Yeah, and it all just felt way too like convenient, and it was just weird. And there's even a line where she says to him, "I'm going to fall in love with you." And it's so awkward. I don't know. It's really, I'm like deeply disturbed by it, the whole thing, because now I'm kind of like, fuck this movie. And I mean, I cried. I don't usually cry watching movies or anything. I don't cry in general very often. And I remember crying at the end of this stupid movie. So I wanted to shut it off by the end. I'm really upset.
I actually rewatched this because somebody in my house had it on, so I got stuck rewatching it recently too. And I remember thinking, this is just a strange movie. Like,
yeah.
And it's total for, like, Lauren, I don't know how old you are or if you even want to give that information out, but Heather and I are about the same age. We're in our mid to late 30s.
I'm 30.
You're 30. Okay. So you're like a little younger than this, but like for Heather and I, Marissa Tomei and particularly Christian Slater, huge heartthrobs when we were young. And like Christian Slater was the guy that every dude wanted to be and the girl that every guy, girl pawned over, you know what I mean? So like everything he did was fucking cool and you wanted to be a part of it. So I remember like watching all his films and just thinking he was a badass. But yeah, this one was particularly strange. And it does, I think you're right that it does not have the same influence that it did when we saw it when we were younger.
No, and it feels like it's trying to be two different things, but her character, especially because Marissa Tomei is such a freaking talented actress, I'm like, there's nothing to the character that she plays. I don't even remember the damn girl's name now. She's just there going, "I want a boyfriend. I want a boyfriend." And then the whole like thing that she comes to the revelation at the end of the story is, she finally followed through with something because she committed to a 6-month relationship with a dude or something. Like, because she went back to beauty school and then she lasted like 20 minutes in beauty school before she quit again. I can't wrap my head around any of it. It was just, it made like no sense at all.
So her hero journey is not very heroic in the film.
Yeah.
No, her hero journey is she wanted a man to come save her, and then he saved her, but she saved him. But that's not what happened. I don't know.
So would you recommend it?
No, no. And that makes me upset because before I'd been like, yeah, this is one of those movies that like you need to see and shit. No, you don't need to see it. I don't understand.
All right. So I think if there's one thing we learned, it's go see Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go. Let's end on that. This brings us to the end of what we've been watching. It's time to get into
today's general discussion topic.
Okay, so it's Oscar time, so we thought we'd have, like, an Oscar-ish show today, which is, like, so boring, but you have to talk about it when it comes around. You don't have to do it like everyone else does. However, I would like to do one kind of basic standard thing that everybody does and just go around the room. Is there one nomination this year that you particularly like and one snub that you particularly are upset about? Can we start with that? Lauren, do you want to start us off with that?
Sure. The one that I really like is Moonlight. I'm so thrilled that that's getting the accolades that it has. The one snub, I think it's probably an even split between Silence and The Witch.
Yes, and I think we're going to talk about Silence more. Can I say something about The Witch? Everyone has droned on and on about how great that fucking movie is. Netflix sent it to me, and it's like, I do this with a lot of movies. I have to get in the mood to put it in the DVD player. And then once it's in, I'm usually fine. But for whatever reason with The Witch, I just couldn't drum up the need to put it in the DVD player. And I ended up sending it back to Netflix saying I'll catch it on cable later. Did I make a huge mistake?
I mean, I think the problem that The Witch had was that it was marketed as being this almost, you know, Puritan paranormal activity. Mm-hmm. Which it isn't. It's actually a very quiet, simple, very scary, but in a different way film. And I love it. I mean, it's much more of an art house film than it was treated as. I do think that it deserves, I think that it deserves more attention. I think that it should be with the same dramas in, you know, at the Oscar level categories.
See, and I got the same vibe from it. I got art house more than I did indie, although I could see it easily getting lost in that shuffle of indies you see all over Netflix streaming. Mm-hmm. So just by title alone. As for me, I wanted to say I really liked the nomination of The Lobster for original screenplay. I'm a big fan of that film. It's a very divisive film. You're going to watch it, and you're either going to love it or hate it. I find it very interesting, and I love that it was honored at least for the writing and the ideas that it put out there. My snub is Deadpool. I think the most popular film of the year should be included in Best Picture category. I think we need to consider pop cultural zeitgeist, everything that people are into, and work that into our nominations. And I don't think Ryan Reynolds' best actor is necessarily a thing that should have happened, but I think Deadpool should have got a little more love. What about you, Heather?
I absolutely agree with what you said about Deadpool. I was excited to see Jeff Bridges nominated for Hell or High Water in a supporting role. He was probably one of my favorite supporting actors of the year. I really would have liked to have seen perhaps something with Ben Foster again, because we just gloss over the fact that he's fucking incredible, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I also was disappointed in nothing for John Goodman. I didn't expect it, but I would have really, really liked to see a nomination
for
him. And yeah, I thought he was incredible.
Yeah, all three of those guys are just such stellar actors. Jeff Bridges has kind of rose to, like, you know, or is a leading man or potential leading man, but with, like, character actor qualities. But John Goodman and Ben Foster are just, like, such good character actors that should be in just about fucking every movie. Anyway, so this is what we thought, basically, just looking at the nominations, a couple ideas. Now, we wanted to talk about something that wasn't what every other podcast is going to talk about. So we threw out a bunch of ideas, and Lauren had a couple of thoughts and feelings about the Oscars, so I thought we might let her expound upon them, and we can jump in and give our thoughts, too. So, Lauren, why don't we talk about a couple of things you were mentioning regarding this year's Oscars?
So you mean, like, the issues of diversity and male, female directors, things like that?
There you go, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that the Oscars this year is obviously trying to do is to get away from the Oscars so white hashtag that cropped up last year over the snubbing of a lot of films and a lot of performances, which I'm glad to see. I'm happy to see that the Oscars are actually making an effort to recognize things like Moonlight, which I'm honestly surprised that they're treating with as much seriousness as they are. And I'm thrilled by it because the Oscars so often is like, you know, the Spielbergs and the Tom Hankses and the Meryl Streeps, and actually Moonlight has kind of crept in there a film by a much lesser known director when you compare him to someone like Spielberg, and with no very huge name stars to mm-hmm. speak of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is like, and it is very much in some ways an art house film. You don't expect to see it up there next to things like Hacksaw Ridge or even Fences. But it's nice to actually begin to see that, and that, you know, there's a lot to complain about still about the Oscars, but at least they're beginning to move in that direction of paying a bit more attention to the nominees that they're getting and the sort of films that they're rewarding. And now, of course, we have to see if Moonlight wins over La La Land. I think that would be a very powerful political statement in itself. Of course, it's a question of whether or not those films should even be against each other.
La La Land and Moonlight?
Well, I think that's one of the problems with Oscar anyway, too. Obviously, there's never much diversity, but it's even in that little cubby of Oscar-type movies where I think a lot of films are almost pandered towards what may be accepted in their little box of glory, which sometimes I really do like, and sometimes I feel like it's a bunch of shit, too. So I haven't seen La La Land yet. That's one I'm going to have to just wait a while. I don't like to see movies when they're too heavily influenced beforehand by everybody else. Either
well,
it's great,
we're in the
middle
of the La La Land. We're in the middle of the La La Land backlash. I think when I first saw that it was being made, I thought that looks cute. I don't know that I need Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone to star in everything together. We have Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence for that, but. It looked like a cute movie. So I'm going to see it, just like I'm going to see everything else. But I'm going to have to get a little, again, amped up to throw the DVD in.
Yeah, exactly that. And a lot of times, too, when Oscar comes around, that's what happens. I for a movie like Moonlight, it's perfect for someone like me where, not necessarily someone like me, I have a bunch of movie friends that are going to sit there and say, this is something you should see. But someone who likes movies and maybe doesn't have a circle of friends, like, that can go, oh, wow, I've never heard of that before, but it's on the Academy Awards, and I watch this every year. So that's going to maybe give them a little bit more diversity in what they're going to see, because I know some people do that. My mom's a perfect example of that. She's not going to go watch any of these movies, but if she sees they're nominated for the Oscars, she's going to be like, what is that? I have to see it afterwards. So there's that I think is really good, and maybe them integrating a little bit more diversity this year will be good in that way. But I still... there's still a bunch of fucking boring ass snobs.
Well, and I have a hard time, you know, at the end of the day, Academy is going to nominate themselves. So La La Land, in my opinion, is going to kill because Hollywood likes to celebrate itself.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
This is great from a standpoint that these nominations, even if it's like you're an outside chance, especially now when there's like 9 films or what they do up to 10 now, a film like Moonlight is probably going to lose, but in Best Picture. But... yeah. It extends the run of the film. It brings awareness to the film. So the Academy Award nomination is a good thing for the film. And I do want to say, do you know how to say the lead actor's name in that film? I can't pronounce it. Mahershala?
Mahershala Ali.
Okay.
He's nominated for – he's Best Supporting Actor.
Yes, and I just want to say I saw this guy on Luke Cage before I knew who he was. I watched Luke Cage earlier this year, and I told my wife, this guy's fucking fantastic. And he's having, like, a great year. So, like, much applause to that guy for getting a nomination. I want to see more out of him. My question regarding the whole diversity issue, I wanted to bring this up. Do you think – I know Oscar tends to get blamed for whitewashing or for not having much diversity. Is this a problem with Oscar, or does this start at the studio level where we do the hiring and the casting and all that? Is it that the Academy doesn't nominate it, or is it that the well is pretty low on water to, or, you know, there's not much to pick from when you look at how many white male people are getting, acting jobs and directing jobs. I mean, there's not as many female director jobs out there, or they're not giving them to them. Is that the problem of Hollywood, or is that Oscar's fault?
I think it's both. I think it's hugely both. I say this all the time, and this is one of the problems that I have when other women friends of mine are going, we need more women movies and all women-oriented movies. I'm like, no, we don't need more. What we need is more quality. We need good roles for women, not just more roles across the board. And then the more good roles we have, then let's have that. And I think what happens is you do get a lot of movies that are made, or roles that are written, that aren't very good and don't represent women very well. Like, for Judd Apatow is someone that God, I hate him so much. He writes women so awful. He hates women. Yes. He freaking hates women. And I like some of his movies and think they're funny, but I can only watch them one or two times because I get through it. I'm like, hate them, hate them, hate them. But I think that's a perfect example of something that is a huge, huge problem on that end too. But I think it's getting better.
Yeah, things are improving, and I agree. Yeah, I agree with Heather. It's a combination of problems. You've got, you have Oscar not nominating. So one of the complaints last year was the number of great films that were out there that were, quote, diverse, mm-hmm. but that weren't getting any nominations. So you have that on the one side. On the other side, yes, it's still a heavily dominated white male industry. And it's up and down the line. You know, it's everyone from the studio heads all the way down to the key grips. Mm-hmm. And there's still this impression that particularly female and minority directors or actors are niche in some way. Yeah. So they make women's films, or they make films for the Black community, for the Latino community, et cetera. And they can't somehow appeal to the, quote, white mainstream, whatever. That barely even exists anymore. But yeah, that's the whole kind of concept, right? So it's getting the ever important, you know, 14 to 38 white male demographic.
I like that point.
Go to the movies.
I like that point you make too about that niche, because that I think that is true. But like, unless you're Tyler Perry or the Wayans brothers, I don't think you're playing to the Black community. I think you're just a Black filmmaker making art. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that's exactly what it should be. But that I don't think that's the way that they're thinking. They're still thinking in terms of niche. So female-driven films, and a good example is like all of the craziness that went up around the new Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have this film that's directed by a man, but that was written by, I know at least one of the screenwriters was a woman, and that stars, you know, four women who are pretty much occupying very similar roles to the original Ghostbusters. But just the violent reaction to that, to the audacity of women appearing in what was supposed to be basically a big budget tentpole film it was shocking. It shocked everybody. It shocked Paul Feig.
Despite the fact that they had a hit under their belt with a no-name property in Bridesmaids, the same talent pool, you know what I mean?
But if you look at it, you have... Exactly, but you have Ghostbusters, which is a very male-centric, you know, franchise to start out with. And then you have Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids is a movie about a woman coping with the fact that her best friend is getting married, right? Mm. So it's a very, very, quote, female film. Even though it appealed to a lot of a diverse group of people, it was a huge success. People called it, you know, it was one of the best comedies of the year, all of that. But so that attitude still exists, and there's still that belief that women can't bring in the box office numbers. Now you get something like Hidden Figures, which is a wonderful example. It's not just women, but it's African-American women. Mm-hmm. And it's killing it. You have films like Rogue One, which is, you know, a woman at the head of a very diverse cast. Mm-hmm. Same thing. So I think that, yeah, we're shifting, but there's still that issue of white men primarily being the ones behind the camera, and films featuring female faces or people of color are automatically getting sort of relegated to secondary tier status.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it should just be about the fucking art. A good movie is a good fucking movie. We've gone over this.
Exactly.
You know, now we're beyond Ghostbusters. Get ready for Ocean 7. So the whole backlash is going to start again. We've discussed Ocean's 8. I left the woman off. My bad. This is why I don't want to talk during that. I just want to listen to you guys, because you're women, and I'm a white male in a Donald Trump society. I have no business talking about anything, so I'm just going to shut up and listen to all your opinions.
Well, you have business talking about it. That's the whole thing, is that you want to know what exactly is it that, you know, I upsets certain groups of men and even some groups of women that they're so offended, because that's a part that I never got about Ghostbusters. I didn't care that it was an all-women cast at all. I just
wanted
didn't
a good
want
fucking
a remake.
Movie.
Yeah, and if they're going to do it, make a good movie. I had no interest in seeing it for reasons that had nothing to do with it being an all-woman cast.
We have exhausted the remake argument, too. Like, it's like irrelevant. Yeah, it doesn't taint the original. The original still exists. It doesn't fucking matter.
And that's something that you and I have been frustrated with over the years, and we finally are getting over. That's just one of those things. But this case, it's shocking to me that anybody would be like, you can't have women play those roles. Like, what? Did we get out of the kitchen suddenly? Well, I can't believe we had time to become actors. It's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And it's bizarre that there's even still that true frame of mind. And I guess I feel like we've come far enough that it shouldn't even be an issue. And it is. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah, my mother has basically been saying, like, I thought we had this fight in the 1970s. You know, this was done. We finished this. Why are we going back to having this kind of difficulty?
Well, shouldn't even be a conversation. That's the thing. It shouldn't even be a conversation that it's an all-women cast at all. It shouldn't even be. It should be like, okay, cool.
Even like, okay, like, honestly, I'm just sick of it. Like, we've discussed Ghostbusters and the upcoming Ocean's 8. Heather and I on several shows. We've had it as a discussion topic. We're staunchly behind there not being gender discrimination and cultural discrimination, that best person for the part should take the fucking part. I don't like seeing the Prince of Persia full of white guys. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's fine. You know, it's Hollywood being Hollywood. I do see a big change coming. My fear is now kind of with everything where it's at politically, that we're going to take a giant step back in a lot of areas of life, including our pop culture and our art. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But I don't – sorry, I'm getting, like, upset. My point is I don't see why it matters or why we have to have this conversation. We're really big in our house right now on the musical Hamilton. Have you guys listened to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Diverse casts. Diverse issues. It's so wonderfully done, and the fact that we have to talk about the fact that it's a diverse cast is ridiculous. We
Agreed.
Should just judge it on its fucking merit that it's good art, and I'm glad that it exists in the world. So enough of that. I wanted to get to your other point before we had to move on. You had a little issue with the film Silence, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that. Can you tell me what your problem was?
Well, first of all, I love Silence. Have you guys seen Silence?
We have not seen Silence. Heather and I are the worst. Like, I haven't seen Moonlight either. I'm dying to see Moonlight, Lying, and Manchester by the Sea. Those are the three I really want to see. Mm-hmm. I'm a DVD guy. I don't go to the theater that often, especially for indies. I'm a horrible person, and they always come out 2 weeks after Oscar, so I'm always behind.
Yep. Yeah. We both are. So we get everybody to come on here and do the work for us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Silence, you know, this is always the issue, is are the Oscars – how political are the Oscars versus how much is it about merit? Mm-hmm. I can't believe that a movie like Hacksaw Ridge got nominated for Best Picture, and yet Scorsese and Silence did not. You know, because in the spectrum of white guys suffering, Silence, you know, Silence is a brilliant film when you just look at it as a work of art. And it's a very complex work of art. You know, it deals with issues of faith. It deals with issues of race and religion and the place of missionaries. And like there's all kinds of complicated relationships that are going on. It's a beautiful film. It's a violent film. It's, you know, probably one of Scorsese's best films in years.
Really?
Like, it's better than The Departed, for damn sure.
Really?
Wow.
But, you know, it's also a very challenging film, and I'm just surprised that it wasn't sort of a shoe-in, at least for a Best Director nod, if not for a Best Picture one. And I wouldn't assume that it would get it necessarily. I'm just surprised it didn't even get that recognition. I think it was nominated for Best Cinematography, which it deserves, but that's all it got, and that's shocking to me.
I'm hearing a lot of people saying this, too. You're definitely not alone.
But Scorsese is, like, historically been overlooked by the Academy. I don't know if it's because – I don't know that they have a problem with him, but just the fact that he's – maybe it's they just, like, we all know he's good. We don't need to do this until The Departed came out. And then they're like, oh, shit, he doesn't have one? We'll give him one right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, he should have won for Taxi Driver in the 1970s. That, like – that was when he should have won his Oscar.
Or Raging Bull.
Or Raging Bull.
And what is the rule anyway? What is the rule anyway that you get one? Okay, well, you've done it. And if you're the best every year and you make the best movie every year and you're the best director, then you should get the damn Oscar.
Yeah, but that never goes, and we'll talk about that more in the
series. Yeah, I know. That's one of those things that drives me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, silence. I honestly I can't figure it out. I don't know if it was just that things got sort of swept under the rug, or it got split in some way. I know that it had, it sort of had a rollout of release. Like, it hasn't even, I don't think it's been released. I don't think it's had a wide release. It had a release in New York and LA, and then it went to, it went to like press screenings and stuff like that. So it got in just under the wire to be nominated.
Yes.
For an Oscar, and then it didn't get anything except for cinematography.
Well, and then I think it did get its release, and it didn't show well. I want to say it made under $2 million, like, the first week it got a wider release. Is that wrong?
May have. Now, I have to say, I mean, I live in New York, but I went to a matinee screening on a weekday, and it was literally sold out.
Oh, really?
Like, there was not an empty seat in the Regal in Union Square.
So why, why?
I don't know.
Why the comparison with Hacksaw Ridge, though? Is it because they're both Andrew Garfield? Is it because there's like such a beloved director versus such a much maligned director for his off-screen antics? Is it the, because from my understanding, and I haven't seen both, and honestly, both of those were not high on my must-see list. I will see them, but they're not high on the ones I'm dying to see. But from my understanding, Hacksaw Ridge has a very uplifting story and tone and emotion to it. Am I wrong?
I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe the problem is that Hacksaw Ridge is more like, is closer to, in tone, I guess, to something like Saving Private Ryan, or a, name your Spielberg. It's, whereas Silence is a more challenging film when you come down to it. It's a longer film. It's a tougher film in many ways, bizarrely enough, and it grapples with issues of faith in a much more complex and difficult way. Like, the film does not come down on a particular side. Hacksaw Ridge, I think, is a bit bigger and flashier and more multiplex. And the result, now again, when you look at someone like Mel Gibson versus someone like Scorsese, I don't know why you would nominate Mel Gibson and not Scorsese.
Well, I agree with that. I will say Mel Gibson, for all his flaws, is a fantastic director.
He is, absolutely, yeah.
But, all right, well, no, go ahead, sorry, Lauren.
No, I was just like, but he's not as good as Scorsese.
And
no,
and
not many are.
Steven Spielberg's probably the only one I would put up there with him. Those are my dudes, yeah. I'm sorry.
And they both have the ability to be so diverse, too. They make so many different kinds of movies, and yet they all still are so much theirs. I love them both.
And they're both white men, so I'm just part of the problem, and I apologize to everyone.
No, one of my favorite directors is Scorsese, and the other one's Alfred Hitchcock, so...
There you go. He's whiter than the other two.
Yes, much whiter.
All right. Well, we haven't solved any problems, but it was nice to vent a little bit about it and get some talking about it in. Hollywood, you suck. Figure it out. You're supposed to be the ones defending us from the political climate. You're supposed to represent the people and get these emotions and these stories out there. So fucking do it, for Christ's sake. Anyway, this brings us to the end of the general discussion topic. It's time to get into Series 7. Let's do that now.
Hey, you better listen up. It's time for the Series 7, so shut the fuck up.
All right, before we move on, I just want to say one more serious thing. During that, I want to say, for the first time, like a year ago, we would have that conversation, would have felt totally normal. In the way the world's going right now, that whole conversation makes me almost nervous to comment and add my thoughts into. When I get on Twitter these days, it's just so fucking depressing. And I want to say Lauren is one of the Twitters I follow the hardest, or I keep a close eye on. She's always got insightful things to say. She always has an opinion. And one thing I will say about Lauren is very up on things politically. She's also a very down-to-earth person. So despite the fact that she has a lot of political and gender beliefs, she's always been very fair. And I've always liked that about you, Lauren. I thought I wanted to mention that.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm trying not to freak out too much right now, but...
Well, I'll turn on my Twitter, and sure enough, I get up about 7 o'clock Pacific, and sure enough, Trump or somebody has done something 5 times over before I even wake up, and you're usually the first voice I hear, and I'm like, oh shit, what happened today? So, thank you for keeping me abreast of things. I appreciate it. Anyway, that's all the serious shit. Let's be silly. This is the Serious 7. These are 7 film-related questions, generated discussion opinions on film and pop culture. They can be interpreted however you want. You can be silly, you can be serious, do whatever you want. Just tell us what you think. So we'll start with question 1. We'll go to Lauren. This is going to be the Oscar edition of this. Lauren, give me an Oscar category you'd like to see removed from the ceremony or a category you'd like to see added to the untelevised ceremony.
To the untelevised or the televised?
I wrote televised. I meant the untelevised. But you can say you can say one you'd like to see added to the one that's televised as well.
All right. I mean, mostly I have categories I want to see added. The two that came up for me was best stunt coordination. And that's actually been something that the Academy has considered a couple of times, and they've always rejected it. But to actually honor stunt people. And I mean, given that they honor the makeup artists and the designers, you might, you know, honor the people that do all of the crazy shit in Captain America and Deadpool. Mm-hmm. The other one that I would love to see added, and they actually rewarded this once in 1928, is Best Unique and Artistic Picture.
Really?
And yeah, it was awarded to, I believe, Murnau's Sunrise. So they actually had 2 Best Picture winners that year.
Did they do something similar with Snow White too? Didn't they give like an honorary award for like visionary achievement to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
I think that they did, and that was before they had an animated
okay.
category.
Okay.
But I would have to look that up again. I just know about the 1928 one because I looked it up because I was like, that's a great idea is to look at a film that really does something unique. So special effects, you know, animation, images, our artistry, and it would be a great way for the Oscars to bring in maybe some of those more art house pictures or films or even mainstream films, something like Avatar, which don't deserve, you know, a best picture reward, but should be rewarded for, you know, some of the achievements that they managed to accomplish, the artistic achievements.
Now they do.
So
have
I thought that would be really cool.
I totally agree. And I love that idea, especially the outside of the box thinking from a creative standpoint. I do know that on the untelevised, they do give kind of like a visionary award for like achievements in technical work and things like that.
Yeah.
Cinematic vision ahead.
It's kind of blanketed though. It's not necessarily going to give it as a whole as the film being also a good movie. Mm-hmm. But you want, I think Avatar is a good example of one that was a movie that was also enjoyable, not the best picture Oscar good or enjoyable, but it used both of those and came together successfully. Not just, I mean, cause then you'd end up with like Michael Bay being nominated and you don't want that.
Nobody wants that. Nobody's going to get that. Don't worry about it. What about you, Heather? What about you? What would you like to see?
I really, if it's a time factor and you wanted to take some off, I don't even know what the sound mixing or sound editing is, how they decide that one is the best or one is the worst. I understand how important sound is. It's one of my favorite things about movies. I think it heavily impacts a lot of really emotional scenes. I think it's very, very important, but for me, I don't know what the hell goes into it or how they make those choices that somebody has the best sound editing or mixing. So you could just take those right off the freaking TV and give those people that have won their awards more time to talk, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to echo that because I don't want to honor that achievement or the work that goes
exactly.
into that part of the film, but honestly, move those to the technical awards. I'm not trying to set everyone back, but and hopefully I can expand upon this in the following questions, but like, the fact of the matter is the majority of the people watching that show want to see the main categories. And I'm fine with leaving some on, like cinematographer I think is very important. Costume production design I think is really interesting. It's very artistic. Sound editing is very technical. Let's move it to the technical awards. They're already like playing people off stage constantly. Let's free up time for other people to talk, yet still honor these other categories in some way. That's what I think.
Yeah, agree.
Let's go to question number 2. Lauren, tell me what makes for a good Oscar acceptance speech, in your opinion.
Short and to the point. Like, the ones that I hate the most are the ones where someone gets up and just thanks everyone in their... It's not even that they're emotional. If they're emotional, I'm more willing to watch Julia Roberts cry for 3 minutes than to just listen to all them rattling off, you know, 1,500 names that nobody else recognizes. And So yeah, quick to the point. If they can get in and like emotional appeal in some way, at least that's entertaining. Because at the end of the day, the Oscars telecast is a piece of entertainment. That's what people are watching. It's to be amused by things. Mm-hmm. Not to think about, you know, the 15,000 people who definitely should get credit, but you know, I don't care if you want to thank your agent.
Yes, yes, I know. And I don't know if that's a coaching thing. I there's probably people telling them in their ear, you know, all these people work for you. You got to get up there and help. You know, we've done it for you. You got to do it for us. Get our name out there. Tell them who the publicist is, your manager, all the people you rely on. I don't like that. I love the family. I like when they think mm-hmm. the wife. I love when they cut to the wife in the audience and she's happy for the man on stage or vice versa, husband for the wife. The fact that they're a team at home and they probably supported each other for years to see that kind of love connection there. I don't mind them thanking those people that I don't know there. I hate the agents, the publicists, all that, Harvey yeah. Weinsteins. I actually wrote down Roberto Benigni, Julia Roberts, Cuba Gooding.
I wrote Halle Berry.
Pure, yep. Pure joy, pure emotion, yeah. And I also like humor. I would love yeah. to see Robert Downey Jr. get an Academy Award just so I could hear his speech, because it's going to be fucking funny. So that's what yeah. I want. And I
agree with that.
I also don't mind a little bit of politics. I don't like.
I don't.
See,
it's not the place for it for me. I'm not tuning into the Oscars to for that. It's the same thing when I see someone pull out a list. I know sometimes that some of them probably are afraid that they're going to forget people or not know what they're going to say, but the second either of those two things happen, I'm like, I want to change the channel.
Well, I could take a little bit of it.
It depends.
Go ahead.
I mean, I get it, but it's for me, it just seems disingenuous. And the political part, it's not the time or the place. It's just not.
Well, see, here's what I think. I don't want to listen to Leonardo DiCaprio tell me about the ice caps melting or, you know, the indigenous people of wherever. I don't like. That's personal agenda. I don't mind you tweeting about it. I don't mind you informing people about it. I don't mind you at the end of your speech saying, please go support at www.org. I don't mind that.
That's fine.
But I don't want to get into a personal agenda. However, I do think that Hollywood, I don't want to say that I agree or disagree with anything Meryl Streep said. I like at the Golden, was it the Golden Globes? I think yeah. it was Golden Globes. I don't want to yeah. say that I agree or disagree. I want to say that I thought she spoke very eloquently, and she used her position of power, for whatever that is, as a platform to empower the people that don't have a voice right now. And I don't mind that. So if you want to do a little of that, fine. We don't need to be drowned in it. But I think in the right circumstance, it's okay. And I don't know why it doesn't bother me, but it doesn't.
I think that's also if it's relevant to the film or to the performance.
Yes.
So, you know, if Ava DuVernay is, I think, nominated for 13th this year, documentary about the prison system, right? Mm-hmm. So if she were to get up and to actually make a political statement during an acceptance speech, that would make perfect sense.
Yes.
Because she has been nominated for and she's won an Oscar for a very political film.
I agree.
It is a bit weird when you get someone like DiCaprio standing up and talking about climate change. You're just like, dude, I don't need to be lectured.
Yeah,
exactly. And it does feel disingenuous. It feels like it's agenda oriented, and you're like, you know, you just won this great award. Shouldn't you be gracious and happy right now instead of finger wagging at me? I mean, I support, even if I agree with what they're saying, it usually is, but yeah, Kai, if you add a little on or do whatever, then that's fine. And like you said, Lauren, too, if it's relevant to the film you made, then that's fine. But it's mm-hmm. it's more of the over the top soapbox ones that I just can't handle.
Yeah, like the Brando statement, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What about
that was exciting?
that threw me for a loop. What about you, Heather? I'm sorry, I didn't get your answer.
Oh, I was pretty much agreeing with you guys. I'm for the genuine ones. Even if I'm not a fan of the person or I'm not happy that they won, you know, when they seem real, I love it when people are really freaking surprised and they lose their shit. Mm-hmm. I freaking love that. Halle Berry's is probably one of my most favorite recent ones. Hers mm-hmm. was genuine and she was beautiful and it was wonderful. I, like I said, I understand when people prepare lists of people to thank. I'm sure that they're terrified that their brain's going to go blank and they're going to talk about farts. But but it does It does. I mean, that's what would happen to me. But I certainly understand it. But at the same time, it does kind of take you out of the moment. Even if they're just in complete utter shock, you know.
All right. Well, speaking of taking out of the moment, let's go to question three. What are your thoughts on the Oscar playoff music? Do you think it's necessary, Lauren?
It's so often used badly.
Yes.
Like I would, like, you know, talking about categories to remove, I would love for them to like cut down the telecast a little bit with all of the extraneous performances and the presenters and everything. Like, they do so much.
Yes.
This doesn't have anything to do with the Oscars. It really is just Hollywood promoting itself.
Mm-hmm.
And actually allow some of the people who were awarded to a little bit of extra time. You know, that again, you can't go too far and allow people to talk for 10 minutes and just babble on about how wonderful, you know, it was that their mother supported them.
Yes.
But there needs to be a little bit more of a balance. And so the Oscar playoff music always winds up feeling just really a little bit mean and a little bit offensive, particularly when it's someone who is older or someone who is visibly emotionally reacting to their win.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, you can't even give them this. Just give them this moment. We don't need to cut to commercial yet, please.
Well, I'll echo that. I kind of think the same thing. I understand the use of it for the moving the show along, but why not just extend the telecast by a half an hour? You know, why do we have these huge production numbers, and why do we have, these horrible fucking intros to these categories? I'm fine when I see Steve Carell and Will Ferrell come out in face paint to talk about, like, white, you know, they have, like, white face paint and huge black eyebrows and, like, a mole on their cheek, and they're going to do a thing about costume design. Like, I know I'm in store for something that's going to be pretty funny. But most of those things are like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Like, let them have 5 minutes. But most of these are these stupid little intros by people that are awkward together and don't deliver them properly anyway. Cut down on that shit. And the other thing is, like, they always tend to play off faster these categories that we're saying, you know, again, this kind of echoes my feelings of why we don't need them on the day. You know, it's the sound editing guy and the animated short guy that gets played off. And those guys tend to have more emotional, poignant speeches, in my opinion. You know?
Yes.
Because it's a huge moment for them. So I just think if it could be a little more like a case-by-case scenario, there's a time when you could wait an extra 10 seconds or play it a little lower or let them finish a thought as opposed to playing them off and embarrassing them. It's just kind of dumb the way they use it, like Lauren
especially
said.
Especially because, I mean, that's what we tune in for. And, you know, and even for me, the fashion, because I don't really care about fashion very much, but I love watching everyone all dressed up on the Oscars. It's fantastic. But I mean, that's what most of us want to see is the awards, who gets what they have to say, and blah, blah, blah. But I think you're probably right about that, Kai, and that's one thing that they don't do well, is they do need it in a case-by-case scenario. Because some, if you're all just rambling on with a frickin' list in your hand, and you're taking 10 minutes.
Play that guy off.
Yeah, play that guy off. If someone is sitting there in tears thanking their mom and thanking their God and thanking their neighbor who inspired them, then by all means, let them go, you know, 30 seconds longer.
Yeah.
It's have a little leeway back and forth. And some of the moments, too, the clips where they show the movies in between, there's just so much fluff or crap throughout the show that doesn't need to be there that they could edit and take out. If they let me run the show, I would have it done in 2 hours.
I will say, too, there was a show they did. There, one of the ones they did a few years back, they actually, while they were introducing the nominees, they would actually show how they did the work. So, like, when you did sound editing, sound mixing, it kind of gave you an insight into how that played into, like, it actually showed video of how they applied it to the film, and it made you understand the category more. I wish they would go back to that.
Well, that would at least be interesting, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go into this next one. What is your biggest Oscar upset, and does time really tell on some of these Oscar winners? Let's go with Lauren.
I mean, the one that I could think of, and you even put it on the list, was Brokeback Mountain losing.
Yeah.
That was surprising to me. I mean, I guess looking back on it, it's surprising and it's not surprising. I actually think as a film, that one is held up both as a film and as an important, you know, kind of milestone in Hollywood filmmaking. That one's held up a lot better than Crash. Crash is sort of, all right, yeah. Great.
No one talks about Crash anymore. No one, I have not revisited Crash. I haven't thought about Crash. Nobody fucking talks about Crash.
I bought it and watched it twice, and then I never watched it again.
Well, then you did it once more than I did.
Yeah, and I have no desire to either. I'm like, yeah, I saw that. That's fine.
Well, and I think, Brokeback Mountain was like an emotional, was actually an emotional film, you know, beyond issues of gay rights, et cetera. It was actually like, oh, this is a really beautiful, well-acted, very well-done film. And Crash is good. It's a perfectly decent movie, but just for Crash to win over Brokeback Mountain is still very surprising, even when you just compare the two of them in terms of quality.
Yeah, I think another one is that you had on our list too, Kai, was Shakespeare in Love. I think it's a fine movie. That's it.
I haven't gone back to it. I've seen Saving Private Ryan a few times.
Nope. Saving Private Ryan is something that I visit once every few years, and every time I watch it, I'm blown away. It's an incredible film from beginning to finish and is amazing and will stand the test of time. Shakespeare in Love is okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
And I should state, we keep saying list. I did, along with this question, I'll usually send out examples of what I'm trying to explain in my questions. So I sent out some examples of films that have been considered upsets in the past. For me, I always have this one in my gut of Star Wars versus Annie Hall. Annie Hall is a seminal film. It did several interesting things in comedy. I'm not a big Woody Allen guy, but I respect the film a lot, and I like the film a lot. Star Wars has become a phenomenon. And it was a phenomenon at the time, and it has held the test of time. I don't know which is more deserving. And then the one I always go back to is 1994, where you have three seminal – like, rarely do you see a category in retrospect that has so many, this many great films in that category. And that year was Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction, Shawshank Redemption.
I don't think that one's fair. I think you can make an argument for any of those movies.
Well, that being my point.
Yeah, I don't think that one's fair to sit there and say they got it wrong that year. That year, it was unfortunate for them.
No, I feel like they gave the film that Oscar gives the film to. They gave it to Forrest Gump. And I like Forrest Gump a lot. I don't know how well it's holding up. I don't revisit
it. I love it. I still absolutely do.
And I'll watch it when it's on. But 10 years ago, I might have thrown it in a little more than I do now. Whereas I've seen Pulp Fiction a lot. Pulp Fiction is, I believe, on AFI's top 100 of all time.
I think that in terms of actually advancing sort of the cause of cinematic art, as it were, is probably Pulp Fiction beats all of them. Because it really was a unique film.
Yes.
When it came out. And it has influenced postmodern filmmaking. And even though, in my opinion, Tarantino's made better films.
You can't throw that out there.
My personal favorite is The Hateful Eight.
Oh God,
the movie that made me just like, I was already going in the direction of being like, okay, yes, Tarantino's a good film, Inglourious Basterds. But by the time we got to The Hateful Eight, I was like, this is he's brilliant. He really knows something. He's actually become a brilliant filmmaker.
Okay.
Anyways, but I think that Pulp Fiction has actually influenced modern filmmaking more than either Saving Private Ryan or Shawshank Redemption. I will take that. I will fight you on that.
Yeah.
Win that.
Yeah, easily. But, and again, Shawshank is no slouch. You know what I mean? It's a really good film.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'd have a hard time with that. I tend to think time really tells us who the best picture was. That's my personal opinion. Let's try question number 5 here. Did I go to everybody? Did I get everybody? Heather?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Okay. Question number 5. Oscar has this tendency. This is the longest question I've ever written for the show, and I'm going to trim it down right now.
I know.
I don't know what I was thinking. Oscar has a tendency to give this quasi-lifetime achievement award, which is nominating or even awarding maybe a lesser performance by a particular actor, but because they don't have an Academy Award, they tend to give it for that one. At least this is something people talk about. Do you guys think this exists? And if so, what do you think about it?
Oh, this one is one of my biggest frustrations and pet peeves of the Oscars. I think perfect examples of, as far as acting roles given this lifetime achievement at times where they probably didn't deserve them, was both Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock. Both of them. I love Julia Roberts. This is not anything to diminish her. Sandra Bullock is another story. But Julia Roberts is probably one of the most talented actresses and most well-loved actresses of my lifetime. And I think she's done... I don't know if I would say comparatively Erin Brockovich wasn't the movie she should have won or blah, blah, blah. But I certainly think that it was based on a whole of her being beloved by the Academy and Hollywood itself, and that's what that award was about. She was amazing in it. It was very good. I still don't think she should have won. And who was it that should have won? I think it was Ellen Bernstein that year, was it?
Oh, God. Oh, God. What the was that the same year as Requiem for a Dream? Was it 2000?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why I was so freaking butthurt.
But was Bernstein in she supporting or was she lead?
It was lead.
Okay.
It was lead. I know I'm almost 100% sure that's what it was.
Let's not talk about Requiem for a Dream either. It's going to ruin my whole fucking day.
Oh, God, that movie. she's brilliant in it.
It's so incredible. I think that was a situation where that happened. I think Sandra Bullock's another good example. I think you know, we've seen it with Scorsese, and again too, I know I said it earlier, but I think if you are good enough every year that one of your movies is the best movie, or you're one of the best actresses or actors, then you should be nominated and you should win if it's deserved. But I don't think that they do that, and it seems very strange. They also did it with The Lord of the Rings. They gave it to Return of the King, which is the lesser of the three films.
Yeah.
As a way to say, like, this is the last one, and we have to, like award this achievement that's happened, this amazing trilogy all shot at once. We need to, like, give it something. Let's do it now before we don't have a chance.
Yeah, and I don't remember what other movies and actors were nominated and such that year, but that's really not fair to them either. Mm-hmm. It's just across the board kind of kills the entire point, if you ask me.
Well, I'm always pissed about it until it's someone I like. Like, I was really happy for Scorsese, and...
Yeah.
Me too!
But again, he should have won one in the 80s, you know, or the 70s.
Exactly.
I found Sandra Bullock's very frustrating. I honestly think she deserved it for Gravity. I think if you would have put one man in a complete green screen carrying a whole film by himself, getting back to the gender issue, I think you would have got a lot more credit, just like Tom Hanks on Castaway, you know, carrying the movie by yourself with only your face on screen. Mind you, she had some nice backdrops and amazing director, but I thought she was much more deserving for Gravity as opposed to The Blind Side. Not that The Blind Side wasn't a moving film. But yeah, I think this very much exists. I find it frustrating until it's someone, you know, one day Tom Cruise is going to win an Academy Award for something, and I'm going to be really fucking happy for him because he should have got it for Magnolia in 96. You know what I mean?
He should have. I think he's one of those actors that might happen with too. He just consistently makes, and it would be in a Julia Roberts way for me. He consistently makes good movies. He's very good in everything he does. And he's beloved by Hollywood and people alike. So at some point, people are going to go, man, he doesn't have an Oscar. That's crappy. Let's throw this guy
from a filmmaker, as a Hollywood star, not as like
as a person. No. I try not to have any personal opinions about the actors. Otherwise, I wouldn't watch half the movies that I do.
Yeah, you have to divide the art from the artist at some point. Tom Cruise is definitely one of those.
And in fairness to him, everyone that meets him says he's like the nicest fucking guy. So like, for all I know, he's a total sweetheart. You know what I mean? Despite his, you know, Scientology and all that other shit.
Until he loses his shit and, like, you know, has you excommunicated by Scientology and things.
Whole other story.
Yes. We've got it. He's bonkers. But as far as an actor goes and as far as, you know, in that community, the way that he's perceived, I think that that's something that will eventually happen. If he doesn't sometime in the near future play a role that is warranted and would give that to him on its own.
All right. What about you, Lauren? Your thoughts on this one?
I'm pretty much in agreement with you guys. And the example that I always come to is Scorsese. The Departed is not his best film. It's a good film. But when you actually compare the rest of his body of work, it's really obvious that the Academy was giving him the Best Director Award that year.
Yeah.
Almost so that they could get rid of him, I think. So it's just like, all right, he has one. Now we don't have to worry about him anymore.
Which is strange, you know? And I'll go back to the last question, by the way. I think Goodfellas was a better film than Dances with Wolves. That's just me.
I agree. I think Goodfellas that's probably my favorite Scorsese film. But, you know, there's so many.
All right, let's go to question number 6. This one's a little bit silly, but I really want to hear your answer. We'll start with Lauren on this one. Meryl Streep, deserving or fucking enough already, we get it. And I'll say this. I think Meryl Streep is arguably one of the greatest actors of all time, if not the. Who, and I ask this just because no one has kind of done this. This is meant from an Oscar standpoint. What's the closest thing to her male contemporary?
Isn't it like Jack Nicholson, I would say? Or at least he was for a while.
See, that was an original one in my head. I think there was a time in the late 90s around As Good As It Gets, turn of the millennium, that like you could say Jack Nicholson always being nominated, having a resurgence later in his career.
De Niro at some point, too, I think was kind of like that. Tom Hanks.
See, Tom Hanks is the first one that comes to my head. If he hasn't done it yet, he still has the potential to kind of be that guy. And he's won multiple and had multiple nominations. He's kind of always in the running, depending on what he chooses that year.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of always up for it. But what about Meryl? Lauren.
Go on. I love Meryl Streep. I think that Meryl Streep is incredibly enjoyable, even when she's doing, like, silly movies like Mamma Mia or doing very serious roles. But it is ridiculous that they keep on nominating her every single time she's in a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, it's reached. And I think it's cheapening her truly great performances as a result. Because, you know, it's like, what, she's nominated this year for Florence Foster Jenkins. And I'm like, I don't even know why this is in. The only reason why she's getting it is because she's Meryl Streep. And she's not, you know, she doesn't need to be nominated every year. This is not something that she needs, and it's not something that the other nominees need, because you're constantly going up against Meryl Streep in every category.
Yes.
I wrote in my notes, if she made a video of herself farting, she would still be nominated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree with everything that you said, too. She is probably one of our greatest actors of all time. There's no question about it. And each role she's in, she is extraordinary. But it does cheapen some of her more outstanding and better performances. And it really isn't fair to everybody else who sometimes someone is better than she was. There's a couple others that they do that with, too. It seems like Renee Zellweger gets those. Nicole Kidman.
You're talking like 10 years ago. Actually, I actually wrote down that while Kate Winslet was set to be her contemporary follow-up, Amy Adams is now filling that role.
Well, you have them that interchange, and just like with the men, that interchange with time. But but Meryl, I think, is the only one of either sex that just, she's there.
She
secretly owns the Academy Awards.
It's a thing. It's definitely a thing, in my opinion. When it's deserving, I'm fine for it. I could easily see her nominated once every 3 to 5 years and have no problem with it. But lately, it's just seemed a little absurd. And again, for the movies, you know what I mean? So I'm with you guys. All right. Question 7. Sorry, Lauren. Everyone, in our opinion, does a bad celebrity impression. Now we want to hear yours. So the floor is yours. Let us know what you got.
Okay, I have a question before I do this. Would we consider Eric Cartman a celebrity?
Yes.
Sure, we'll take it.
I do.
All right. So I can do an Eric Cartman impression if I can think of something. So
Mel Gibson, Cal. Mel Gibson.
I need more. You got to at least say cheesy poos.
I want some cheesy poos.
All right, perfect. Now we can move on. It's time to play the game. Let's do that.
The game, don't blow it, the game.
All right, Lauren, you've done this before, but you're going to do it again. So the game is simple. Right. I have chosen 3 films for you. Actually, Heather has. I'll explain in a sec. For each film, I have 7 clues that include the year and genre of the film. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. Actors in the film, tagline, director. If you were to guess on the first clue, you would get 7 points. Second clue, 6 points, so on down. A perfect score is 21. Probably not going to happen. We say that if you get 12, you've done very well. So, these are the leftover movies that Heather chose for our Tournament of Champions. I had 3 left, so I'm going to use them today. These are Heather-chosen movies, so they're going to be fucking stupid. I'm just going to put that out there right up front. We're instituting a new rule. There is a 10-second rule for your guests now, because there's too many ahs and ums and blah, blah, blah. So, we are putting a 10-second rule starting this year. So, you are the first one to compete in the new season. I wish you luck. Your first film for 7 points is a 1997 horror sci-fi thriller.
We encourage you to guess something, even if you don't know the answer.
Yes.
Aliens.
For 6, you know I said 97, not like 79, right? I'm just checking.
Aliens is not 79.
I it's know, 84. But it's not 97 either, so I just want to make sure I said the right idea. All right.
Yes, I did.
For 6 points, Jason Isaacs is in this movie.
Oh, fuck me.
Ooh, did I make this list? I made this one. Okay.
1997?
Yes.
Oh.
Keep on going.
Okay. For 5 points, the tagline of the film is Infinite Space, Infinite Terror.
Event Horizon?
It is Event Horizon for 5 points. That is correct.
I don't remember picking that. Yeah.
All right. Your second film for 7 points is a 1984 drama, music, romance.
New York, New York.
For 6 points, Diane Wiest is in this movie. Great and everything.
Drama, music, romance?
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
I'm sorry.
Seconds. 5 seconds.
Keep going. Keep going.
Okay, this should help. For 5 points, the tagline is one kid, one town, one chance.
Footloose?
Oh.
It is Footloose for 5 points. That is correct.
I didn't remember Diane Wiest was in that.
Okay. I didn't either. Isn't that weird? I remember everything except for that. Last place, yeah. All right, 4, 7 points. Your last film is a 1999 mystery thriller. I apologize.
That's
for
not fair
choices.
In 99.
You picked
Primal
it.
Primal Fear.
Primal Fear is incorrect. Remember, Heather chose these. For 6 points, James Gandolfini is in this movie. Because everybody knows Gandolfini's late 90s pre-soprano resume.
I do, actually. I've always enjoyed him.
Please keep going. I have no clue.
Okay, for 5 points,
I don't know what
the tagline is. You seem to do well with taglines, by the way. You can't prepare for where the truth will take you.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Along came a spider. I don't know.
For 4 points, Joaquin Phoenix is in this movie.
Oh.
1999?
I know this one.
Wow, I don't. I can't even think of it.
3 seconds. Throw a Joaquin film out.
A lot of people have done that.
All right, moving on. For 3 points, Joel Schumacher is in this film. Not in this film. I'm sorry. He directed the film. That would be horrible if he was in the film. Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm still like you've stumped me on this one. I did not have very good Joel Schumacher cred, so.
This one is one of my favorites.
All right. I will give you the star for 2 points. Nicolas Cage is the star of this film.
Is it like Snake Eyes? No, that's De Palma. I don't know, man.
You can't prepare for where the truth will take you. This 1999 mystery thriller with James Gandolfini, Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Joel Schumacher, and starring Nicolas Cage.
I got nothing.
Okay.
Sorry.
For 1 point, I'll give you a hint. It is also the title of a J.J. Abrams movie. Is it? Wait, did I do that? No, that's not right. Sorry. I take that back. this movie involves a... I forget, what do we do at the 1 point? We never get down to the 1 point, Heather. Didn't we give them a clue?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't think we did.
Or didn't we just tell them what it was? Wasn't that
just I think we just tell them what it
I
is.
I did all right on the other two, you know?
I think one we do the title.
Okay.
You don't let me tell anything after the one.
For 1 point, the movie rhymes with Schmate Schmillimeter.
Oh, 8mm.
It is 8mm yeah. For 1 point, bringing you to a grand total of 11.
Well, that's great.
Hey,
it is actually.
What can I say?
Oh my God! How the fuck am I supposed to know James Gandolfini in 1999?
Oh, it's Joaquin Phoenix in that mesh shirt that always gets me going.
I didn't even know. I didn't know that Joaquin Phoenix was in that movie.
You know what's crazy?
He played the kid, the like punk rock kid who was helping Nick Cage investigate and find all those like underground smut films and stuff.
Yeah,
I love that movie though.
It was emo goth more than punk. Let's not demean punk rock, okay? I'll say this. I was thinking of Super 8 in my head, and it was 8mm, and I don't know why the two were the same in my head. Anyway, I want to thank Lauren for coming on the show. Yeah, sorry. I want to thank Lauren for coming on the show. Lauren, you're an old friend of ours, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to do this with us. Will you please take this opportunity to promote once more everything you do online and where people can find you?
All right. Everything that I do online, my personal blog is Suddenly a Shot Rang Out, which is suddenlyashotrangout.com. I also write for WeGotThisCover.com and MoviesFilmCinema.com. And my Twitter handle is at LHBusiness. That's LHBIZNESS.
And she's a good follow, so follow her. So thank you again, Lauren. Heather, what do we want to promote?
You should go follow us on Instagram. We are MILFcast, and we're fancy there. There's always good things to look at because that's what Instagram is. It's for looking. Occasionally, Kai and I will be on Twitter, even though we say we try and tweet all the time. I'm at Heather_Kenobi, and Kai is at Kiderman. Is that correct?
That's not Kiderman, Michigan girl. It's K-A-I-D-E-R-M-A-N, Kiderman.
You can say that all day. I'm going to pronounce it with my freaking weird Midwestern kind of almost Canadian slash a little ghetto slang. All right? That's okay. How it comes out. And otherwise, we are also on Facebook.
Yes.
And you can follow us there.
Find our page. I think she did really well. That's about it. I could do this all day, but there's beers to be drank, movies to be seen. I'm going to go do that. We'll see you guys next time. Heather?
Chicken of China, the Chinese chicken.
Gotta get into it. Cartoon's got the boom, and maybe it's the wrong thing.
Maybe the wrong thing. I don't know what made me think of that.
I don't know what makes you think of a lot of things you say.